I was telling everybody that we were doing the show, and they're
Yeah.
here. They're here. It's great. We got about 30 people just in the last 10 minutes signed up. Like, we've got
Oh my
a
goodness.
ton of people here. So I'm glad you guys have made it. Josh, we're going to just kind of dive in. Is there anything that you want to just kind of confirm for this webinar? Anything you want to just kind of share before we jump into this?
I mean, I'm just excited to be here with you, Charlie. I love doing these free webinars. I don't know about you. We send this out to our newsletter to let folks know. And I got multiple people that were like, this is so timely. they're feeling it on their campus. The teachers are struggling. I got not only emails, I got Voxer messages from folks saying that how important it was for us to jump on this. And so, yeah, I'm super excited, as I think there's a lot of dysregulation this time of year in February. And this is typically, when we're working with schools, the highest referred month. So a lot going on right now.
Yeah, you would know because you have a lot of experience there. So somebody told me that the job you used to do was the armpit of education. That's what I heard. Josh is a former dean of students.
Well, that position, yeah. So I did the dean of students, and then I was the assistant principal for a longer duration of time. But yeah, that 1 year was very difficult, because that the dean of students, for those who don't know, is the person that takes care of all of student discipline for the campus. And we had 1,300 students in that middle school. So it was North Dallas. It was a very big community that had a lot of problems. And so we were seeing it on the campus. And so a lot of the things that are in our book, The Language of Behaviors, from that 1 year, but then also my time as an assistant principal moving forward.
Yeah. Well, good. Okay. Well, let's give everybody what they're here for. Let's do this.
Yeah,
thing.
Let's do it.
Okay. So we're going to present to you today the uncomfortable truth about what's going on with behaviors in our school system. And this is a problem that you all are dealing with. We know, because we are appealing to you, school and district leaders. We work with you all over the globe, and you asked for this. So we're here to give you this information. So this is, again, it's a system level problem. And we want to thank you so much for being here, because you are the solution. You are the solution. You are going to radiate this out in your own school community. And I know that you have a ton of pressure. Okay. And so the referrals, like Josh said, they're climbing. Teachers are exhausted. They're reporting to the school counselor. Does that make sense? If you're a school counselor, you know what I'm talking about. They're going to you when they're struggling. They don't know what to do. And that is a personal thing to them. And leaders, we tend to react instead of lead at this time. It's a little different than August, when we're just starting back to school and we're more calm and excited. We're still excited, but the calm gets very frenzied. So we just want you to think about that, that behavior and that stress that's going on. They're not actually separate problems. They're not separate at all. They're the same systemic breakdown. It's not your fault. It's not their fault. It's the system problem, but we're in the system. So we don't want to get stuck in that problem. All right. And so if consequences or those punishments that you're using, like ISS, sending kids out of the classroom, what teachers do, if those were working, then we would not have these problems. Referrals would be down. Behaviors would be decreasing, but that's not happening, is it? So we're going to shift the question here. We're going to shift it. It's not what's wrong with kids. It's what is our system producing? And it's not just what they're producing with kids. It's what are they producing with the staff? Again, it's systemic. All right. So Josh and I are doing this a little different today. We're going to talk with you. We're not going to just like show a bunch of slides. We want to talk with you about this. We want to hear from you. Ask questions. Go ahead. There's a Q&A button. Make sure you put your questions there. We're going to do a Q&A session after this. All right. So I'm going to do this one little activity with you. Remember, we're not talking behavior tips here. We're giving you leadership level shifts. This is what we're looking at. The big system. Josh and I really want those big system changes. So I want you to do that with us. So here's the reality. We're going to do a reality check right now. I want you to complete this sentence in your head. Ready? Complete this sentence in your head. You could jot it down. You're with me? All right. Put everything down and focus. In your building. So you're saying to yourself, in our building, student behavior usually escalates when adults feel blank. I'll repeat it again. Think of the answer. In our building, student behavior usually escalates when adults feel what? Okay, write it down. Notice patterns. Don't assign blame. Notice the patterns. Okay, Josh, from a leadership lens, why do so many administrators get stuck in kind of this loop, that reactive loop?
Yeah, so there's, I love that you started with systems, Charlie, because I think this is going to be something that we have as a thread throughout our conversation today. But the reality is right now, especially in February, is that our leaders are managing a massive amount of referrals. And so what typically the referrals are low-level infractions. So that's simply disrespect, or it's going to be also a distraction in the classroom. And so, you know, when we're going through that in February, what's happening is that a lot of teachers are seeing behaviors consistently happen for months and months and months, and now they've kind of hit their wall, right? I'm tired of this. This needs to stop. So now I'm going to refer. The other thing is the overwhelm of the teachers is also feeling like there's a lack of communication, right? So I've referred a student, or maybe I've referred multiple students, and now I'm just kind of hoping that the administrators are taking care of it. But what we're seeing is that there's an incomplete system where there's a lack of communication to the teachers to say, this is what's been done after you referred the student. And the other thing too is that the leaders are feeling a consistent level of high urgency from everybody, right? From the student, from the parents, from the teacher. And sometimes, depending on how escalated it is, even from those above them in the district, trying to say, we need to get this done, or you need to do this with this student in regards to that referral. The other thing we can talk about today too is the design flaws. Most of the systems that we're working with when we're working with schools is that it's built on compliance, not capacity. And so we need to address that. The thing is that we're relying on consequences too much and removal and just assuming that it's magically going to fix the behavior. And then the other thing is that the adults are assuming that there's unlimited bandwidth, which as we know, is not true. So we're going to name some of the cycles too. So what we're seeing is escalation is increasing, school morale is dropping right now, and then leaders, when they're managing symptoms instead of strengthening systems, what we're seeing is that there's complete breakdowns and mistrust that goes with that. So we want to shift. We want to make a shift forward. And so we want to make sure that we're building adult capacity first, because like you said, there's a connection. There's a connection between student behavior and what teachers are feeling, what educators are feeling, what leaders are feeling, which is that burnout. And so we need to make sure that, you know, we're shifting that instead of just reacting and staying in it. So I want to break down that tradition as far as the behavioral system and actually reinforce, you know, what we should be doing. And so let's maybe paint, and I don't know why I'm getting like a million texts as we're talking right now, but I need to turn my watch off.
That's what we do.
So let me turn my watch off. Charlie, when you're thinking through this and what I'm saying, what are some thoughts that are going through your head?
Yeah, you know what? There's a lot, actually. There's a lot of cycles going on. And mm-hmm. So I always say in the work that you and I do, it's always about like, we try to do these one and done PDs. We try to have these one-off sessions, and that can actually be really helpful when we target a problem, but it's the long-term that we need to look at. And so there's some hidden cycles going on, and the teacher feeling overwhelmed, that's no secret, but that is a big cycle. And yeah. So if we're working with kids, we've got to work with the adults first.
For sure.
Right? We've been trying to put it on kids for so many years, actually since 1994. That's when CASEL came out. Great stuff. Keep on using it. We need it. It's all evidence-based. Keep using it. But that's when we introduced SEL to our classes. And so we started equipping students. And that's what we've been doing for about 30 years now. And then we send those kids back to burned out teachers and stressed out parents, expecting them to function better. And they're not. So we need to equip the adults. So yeah. Go ahead, Josh. What else do you have to say?
Of course. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of paint the scene for us, right? Which is a familiar thing that happens on thousands and thousands of campuses all over the United States, which is, you know, a common day is a student escalates and then the teacher reacts, right? And calls to the office. The admin intervenes, probably students removed, and then the teacher in the moment feels like a temporary relief. But some important questions we need to ask ourselves, right? Did we teach a skill in that moment? Did we restore trust between the student and the teacher? And do we strengthen the adult capacity through those interactions? So I just want you to answer that, as you know, this is a scenario and based on the questions that I provided. So I'm going to say, no, no, those things didn't happen. We managed the moment, right? We reacted to what occurred. And in a traditional model, that is a familiar scene. Those are, you know, and depending on what your discipline matrix looks like, that's, that may even be, you know, what step-by-step is supposed to happen. But, you know, there's also some hidden things there too. And Charlie, I'd love for you to discuss that more about like kind of that hidden cycle that occurs also from that scenario.
Yeah. I mean, it's important to think of it as a cycle because we're all looped into it. So it goes back. What do you think I'm going to say, you guys? What do you think I'm going to say? Okay. The teacher feeling overwhelmed. They're coming to you now so more than ever. And by the way, many of them, and I believe the statistic is 70% of students across this nation right now, are seriously considering leaving. They're seriously considering stepping out. And they don't always want to finish out the school year either. Some of them are just so overburdened. And I see them clinically. They come to me and they're having high anxiety, high depression. All right. So you'll notice this. I want you to start looking for these patterns. Start looking. You probably already noticed. If you showed up here today, you probably already noticed. So here's what it, like their tone tightens up. You'll see them like not relaxed when they're talking to you. They'll feel tightened up and you'll see it. You'll notice it. Their patience is very short, as you know. Yours gets that way too. And then their sense of needing control over everything increases. And that looks like bad teaching, a bad employee, you go home and a bad parent or a bad partner. And so it shows up in our relationships just as much. And it's not okay. But that's a pattern that's happening. The student nervous system responds to that too. And that's why you're seeing so many behaviors, because teachers are not prepared. Their nervous system is so heightened. So if you think of your building, and Josh, you'll know this, that I say this all the time, but if you look at your building, I want you to envision a bunch of nervous systems right now. Think of all the nervous systems. Are they heightened or are they calm? Are they just about ready to go off? So that's the kind of patterns we're seeing, the kind of cycles. They're hidden, but you can find them. The power struggles are in there, right? The defensiveness, the escalation, those are the patterns we're seeing. And those are parts of those cycles. So the teacher gets, here's the cycle. The teacher gets overwhelmed. The student's nervous system responds to that or really reacts, and admin steps in. So then they remove the kid from the classroom, or the teacher's like, get this kid out of my class and fix them. And then send them back when they're fixed. Doesn't make sense, but that's what happens. Sometimes there's a safety concern and there's cyclical problems there. I get it. But this is pretty typical what happens, or they send them to ISS and that's not working. So there's then, and not always, it's not that it's not always working. It's often not working. So that's why you're seeing so many problems. You'd rather keep that kid in the classroom, but then that teacher is still dysregulated. So then we document it, we give them a consequence. So that's part of the cycle, teacher, student, admin. Okay, so the system rewards removal. Think about that. And we're struggling with mental illness with these kids who feel so isolated and alone already. And if you're working with kids who are neurodivergent, and there's 1 out of 5 in our public schools who are neurodivergent, and we do not support that as well as we need to in our schools, then of course, sending them out, they already have that low self-esteem because they know they're different. They know that they can't adhere to all the rules and all the rigidity that our system has. And so it just further compounds the situation, so they feel more isolated and alone. They go into depression, anxiety, and that cycle individually keeps going. All right, so no one really is learning regulation here. But this is how we can pivot. So you've got the teacher learns to send them out. The student learns to avoid or escalate, either one. And then they can go out because they haven't resolved that with the teacher or the environment. Something in the environment might be making them feel out of control. And then the administrator learns to manage volume. And we can't handle that right now in the midst of the school year. And that's why it's so overwhelming. So no one's learning regulation. But that's the pivot line here, okay? That's where we got to really hold that line and just change it. It's not a behavior problem. It's a capacity problem. And we're asking adults to regulate students without regulating the system and helping them to regulate within the system. So most discipline systems were built for control, to have that control, which there is safety in that. Yes, but is it working the way that you're wanting it to work? Or would you rather that kid stay in the classroom with a regulated teacher who feels capable and confident in working with those students? Yeah. So I'd love to hear. I see some people, we're on TikTok live right now too, and I'd love to see your comments as well. So this is, they're not having that nervous system stability. So let me just recap that, and then Josh is going to move forward here. So if you design a system around compliance, you will always produce escalation. Hear that, all right? And it's not because your staff are bad, and it's not because kids are broken. It's because the system is doing exactly what it was designed to do. Okay, Josh, go on. I know you got stuff to say here.
Well, I think there's just some misconceptions based on what you were talking about, and so we're going to call those out. I wanted to real quick, though, throw in some pain points and get some feedback from folks. So hopefully this works. I'm going to put it in the chat. I don't know if for those who are participating, if you'll be able to get in the chat and either put down A, B, or C, what's going on in your world. But we'd love to get some feedback from you for those who are live with us. The other thing too, Charlie, when you were talking, I was just thinking through, you know, some of those misconceptions, both from administrators and from teachers. On the administrative point, it's hard for them to admit that the work that we're doing right now in a traditional model is not actually helping anyone. I think they just assume that because it's been put in place, and like you said, some of these practices are, you know, something that's been here for 100 years. You talked about social emotional learning, but the consequences that exist as far as detention, ISS, OSS, and some of these other punishments are things that we just assume are going to work because they've been in place for so long. The other thing too is the idea that consistency means consequences. And I would even go further and say that consequences equal punishment. But if we're truly looking at consequences, consequences can be good or bad if we're looking at what that looks like in the truest form of the word. And for us, a lot of times we're finding that there's a disconnect with language. What one person thinks the term consequence means is far different than the person that is sitting to their left or to their right. And so we need to have common language to make sure that we're all in the same mind frame as far as what that looks like working with the students. The other thing too is, you know, consistency without regulation is just escalation. And so we need to look through that too, because I think a lot of our adults talk about social emotional learning. They talk about how to prepare kids for tough situations. But then as leaders, we're just assuming that all of our teachers have those skills themselves to regulate in tough conversations or in an escalated state of mind in the classroom. So yeah. If you're live with us, I'd love for you to jump in the chat, let us know. The question is, which feels more accurate in your building right now? So A is too many behaviors, B is too many burned out adults, or C, both, they're feeding each other, right? There's that correlation that we talked about before. So Charlie, will you talk a little bit more too about like why the traditional behavior system is failing a lot of folks? Because there's a lot going on right now, like we said, at this time of year.
Yeah. Well, you and I wrote a book on this. So behavior is communication. You have heard it a million times. You know that. It's not defiance, because I can tell you so many times when these kids come to me to get therapy because they've been sent out and they have behavior plans and they're not complying in the classroom and they're behaviorally just not working in the system that they're in. They tell me they don't want to be that way. They'd rather behave. They'd rather get along with people. They'd rather respect their teachers. I'm not saying they're not doing it, because they are, but they're communicating an unmet need. You've probably heard that a million times as well. And so I want you to realize that those punitive responses actually suppress behavior short term. So it can work because we're working through control, right? And yes, we do need to have management of a system and really that security of a system. But when you try to control someone and suppress the behavior with any means, it might work in the short term, but it worsens in the long term. And that's why our system is so overwhelmed. Yes, we've had hiccups. We have had some past things going. We've got polarization going on. There's a lot going on. And that dirty word is COVID. It did disrupt the system. We know that. We're seeing some of those things. But when we try to gain control back, it's just not working. So if we remove students as well, that actually removes opportunity to teach skills or restore trust. And teachers can do that. They just were never taught. Think of the teacher programs that we have, the teacher prep programs. I mean, I work with colleges. Josh works with colleges too. They just are not preparing teachers to build the trust with students. They're still teaching theory. They're still trying to teach a little management, but not really. And what they're not doing is they're not teaching about how the brain works and how the brain and body is connected. And when you see a student who is dysregulated, this is what it looks like versus this is a mental health problem or this is a potential mental illness. And here's the signs and symptoms and here's how I communicate it properly to the next person who can then diagnose. So it's really about how do we acquire that capacity? So I'm going to do an assumption audit here because teachers are just left alone to manage behavior without a shared system. They're stuck. They feel alone and they are getting disenfranchised and we don't want that. So here's an activity. An assumption audit. I want you to list or think of one behavior that staff complain about the most. You can only choose one, only one. Okay, so what are staff complaining about the most right now? Think about it, write it down. If I were you, I'd write it down because I'd want to bring it back to them to have a conversation, a contained conversation. And I want you to write the automatic audit assumption beside it. So here's what you ask yourself. What might this behavior actually be communicating? Not about the student right now. They're complaining about students, but I want you to think of their need right now. What might their behavior actually be communicating? That's the staff. And then I want you to take this activity back to your next staff meeting, and I want you to ask them that question. I want you to go through the same activity. You can have them actually think about the students and do the same activity. So you're listing one behavior that they complain about the most. You could have your teachers ask that of students, and then ask them, what is the automatic audit assumption? What assumption are we making about that? And what might they actually be communicating? But I want you to connect with your staff here. So do that. I was repeating that so you can maybe have an idea of doing that for your next staff meeting, or think about it for right now, because that can solve some problems right there. Okay, Josh, let's talk about that leadership framework that we use in the language of behavior. This is what we're trying to share with you guys so you have something to go on.
Perfect. All right. So just so everyone knows, I changed the chat settings. So hopefully that works for everyone. You can definitely throw your questions in there too, or answer the question that I had before. So hopefully, like I said, that works for everyone. All right. So we're talking about the leadership framework. So the work that we do, Charlie, and I'm so proud of, what we are working with colleges specifically, and there's several that are using the language of behavior, our book, for that prep program. So I think that's so important. But with leadership specifically that we're talking through is tenet one, tenet two, and tenet three. So tenet one, when we're working with leaders, we're looking at the environment shapes behavior more than rules. And so if you're not familiar with the book, tenet one is consider your environment. So that's really looking at the educational space, looking at, the school as a whole, as far as what are some things that are in the way or something that could be triggering to our students that potentially have chronic stress, trauma, or are neurodivergent students, like Charlie was talking about before. Tenet two with that leadership framework is escalation happens when breakdowns are skipped. And so we're really looking at exploring the behavior of our students. And that's something that our prep programs are not doing a great job of, which they're starting to see that needs to be addressed, right? Is what are the verbal or nonverbal things that are going on with our students that we need to be able to decipher and start to look at as far as a form of communication, because our kids are telling us what's going on, even sometimes when they aren't able to explain it with their own verbiage. And so as leaders, we need to make sure that our staff understands de-escalation strategies and appropriate communication with our kids, especially when they're in an escalated state. Third tenet, tenet three, when we're working with that leadership framework, is intentional responses and reducing that power struggle. So that's responding intentionally is that third tenet in our book. And so, as leaders, as administrators, when something happens, instead of just reacting, we have a plan that's in place for our kids to do some very important things. One is that the students are taking ownership of what is behind the action. They need to understand who's affected. We need to be able to teach the skills needed for them to be successful, because they're going to, again, see whatever this negative experience was, they're going to see it again. And so we want to make sure that they have the skills necessary to do it in a different way, an appropriate way moving forward. And then also having a plan of restoring the harm that was caused and from that action, from that negative action. And so that's where the consequences come in, and making sure the consequences are consistent, but also attached to what the behavior was, because just throwing them in ISS is going to be a disconnected consequence for that child, because it's not related to what is actually happening on the campus. So what we want is to do some tenant mapping. So I want you to think through what's going on in your world, right? I want you to identify maybe one reoccurring behavior issue that you're seeing in your classroom or on your campus. And I want you to look at the three tenants and see, you know, what is most often missing in the adult response that's occurring right now. All right. So, Charlie, we're going to kind of shift the conversation to one-off PDs. I'd love for your perspective on this.
Yeah. When it targets a specific issue, that is great. Like when I did the McGraw-Hill training and had like, I don't know, 7,000 people there. Some of you might be here right now if you were there. So glad you were there. And we targeted those behaviors in the classroom, those common behavior issues. Well, so many people globally are dealing with that issue that we did that. Sometimes I do how to support ADHD in the classroom. So if people are specifically struggling with that, that one thing, great. When I worked with other districts and other organizations, they needed me to bring a clinical lens and say, how do we support teachers who just lost a staff member? Or when we were talking about suicide, we were saying, you know, nobody knows how to talk to staff about that. We expect the staff to support the kids, but nobody knows how to support the staff, or they don't know how to support themselves. And so that was a very targeted, that was a training session. So I do those all the time. They're so important, right? Very important. Anxiety and avoidance, I do that one all the time. Sometimes though, when we're always, when we're trying to make a systemic change, and everybody here right now is trying to do that with me, you wouldn't have shown up otherwise. We have to think bigger. And so the one-off PD days, which we've done, Josh, we've done a million of those. I love that. It's a great starting point for our staff. But those staff members actually then get a little disenfranchised, or they have false hope. It kind of reinforces this false hope. Because they're like, great, I love this information. You left me with some skills, some tangible tools, the rapid reset. Y'all know what I'm talking about. If you've seen me, you know. And I absolutely have those moments. And they're like, now what? Well, if our leaders don't continue setting up that space for them, then they just feel even more distrust. So we don't want to create that. We want to have a long-term plan for them. They're craving that. And the one and done kind of like videos, or the whole year long, go watch a video, do a workbook, isn't working either. It's a great thing to try like for a few minutes, maybe one time, but not all the time. And I would even say now they don't want that. They want this. They want to like talk. They want to ask questions that's pressing. And then they want to have specific answers based on what's going on for them right there in that moment. And there's very collective things going on. Okay, so then teachers return to that unchanged system after that professional development. That's why that doesn't work. And then leadership, we unintentionally do this, but we signal kind of like, go figure it out. I gave you a couple of tools, now go figure it out. Well, really the learning is through the practice and the support. So that's what needs to happen long-term. That's what Josh and I, we've shifted all that we've done to doing this work, because that's what, first of all, people were asking us for. But secondly, we know, and so do you, that that kind of support is what really is going to make that systemic change, which is going to help our kids and the future generations. It's going to keep your teachers in place. They are going to stay in place when they have that support ongoingly, because burnout increases. I know burnout's a bad word, but it's there. And this is the time of year they're feeling it. It increases when that responsibility rises again, but they don't have the support anymore. So that's why they're saying these things and acting out. And they're just dysregulated. Not always. Not always, but often. Okay, so we're going to now do a PD audit. What is your professional development doing here? Think of the last PD that your staff liked or that you liked. You can do both, but I really want to focus, like if you're in leadership and you were in charge of PD or you're in charge now, I want you to think about the last time they actually liked PD, professional development. And I want to now know what changed system-wide as a result of that professional development. What changed system-wide? What stayed the same? Have the same conversation. Have the same conversation with your staff at the next meeting. If you're not ready to do that, because I know you're thinking, oh my gosh, it's just going to create a lot of problems, a lot of complaining. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. We can contain that too. But we need to also address that and think about, okay, well, what did work and what didn't work? What changed system-wide like we need? What stayed the same? Did that contribute to them feeling more mistrust and more disenfranchised? And let's just own it. Just take ownership and say, you know what? I'm really trying, because I know you are. I know we all are. Our whole communities are trying to support kids. I see people in here who are in my community here in Northern Kentucky, and I know that you have, you do clinical work. So I see you, and I'm glad you showed up. I know people that came to other trainings. I'm seeing your names. I know what you're doing in your buildings. I know what you're doing globally. And it's still, we need to have these conversations because we have to keep growing. All right, Josh, again, I know that you're going to talk about like what actually does work. What is working?
Yeah, sorry, I was looking at the Q&A. So no, we will definitely address those. The ones that we're receiving are actually have very similar aspects. So we'll dive into that as soon as we're done here. But yeah, to your question, Charlie, you know, what actually works as far as professional development. I think the biggest thing is that there's a lack of community. I think there's a lack of support. I think there's a lack of understanding that a lot of other people on the campus are feeling the exact same way I'm feeling. They're having the exact same problems. And so we need to make sure that we're coming together for that. And so a lot of the work that we do is a cohort model or a cohort based like building with that. And so, you know, that's something that, you know, you can have us help in as far as the construction of that, or it could be something that's grassroots. So Charlie, we wrote about this in the language of behavior, which is that relationship action team. Unfortunately, it was called the RATS group because that was the acronym. I didn't love that, but that's what it was. And that RATS group was just a group of people, like-minded folks that were like, hey, the system that we have right now is not working. So what can we do to come together, to learn, and to support each other? And to also have shared strategies to make sure that we have same systems, same language, because that's similar to what we were talking about before, that a lot of times that's what's the breakdown in that system. So, you know, coming together, supporting each other, learning. And so what that group was that was seven of us, Charlie, that started off as that relationship action team. And that was just a mixture of teachers, counselor, 504 coordinator, myself as the administrator, and we came together with just some kind of main concepts, which was one, whatever you have as far as your experience or your biases or your expectations, like that all falls off at the door. Like when you come in, you need to be open-minded to whatever is being suggested. The beautiful thing too was like, I wasn't the expert. I wasn't the one that coming in saying, I know it all. It was all of us seeking information and to be better as far as our practices. And so we were constantly going online and trying to find new things that we thought, you know what, let's bring to the group and see that collective response as far as, is this something that we want to implement? Which is that second step as far as the group, is that everyone was going to try what was offered up from the group, right? So I have a new practice, I bring it to the table. Okay, we're all going to try it. If it works, you keep it. If it doesn't work, you're not going to do it again. And then the third thing is if something is successful, that you're going to share it out with other people. So you're going to share it with your peers, share it with people on the campus, to let them know about it, and then also invite them into that relationship action team. And so we went from seven people to start with to half the staff by the end of the school year. Because everyone was wanting those skills. They wanted to be able to have an opportunity to not only learn, but to get those things modeled for them, but then also get the feedback. And that's what it is that reinforcement, because we consistently met, which is the other component of that, is we met either twice a month or at least once a month, which is that reinforcement, right? It's important for us to come together, to talk through things, to find some solutions so that we prevent that drift that occurs, especially right now, right? It was our way to connect, to say, okay, what's going on? And, you know, are we seeing tardies more? Are we seeing some more disruptive behaviors? What are some things that we can do in the classroom? And so that was that capacity shift, you know, because now I've got a whole support system. I'm not doing the work alone. So, Charlie, let's talk about kind of the path moving forward. What are some things that you're thinking of?
Yeah. Well, here's what first comes to my mind is schools don't need more initiatives. Okay. Like, right. You guys, can you give me a thumbs up in the chat if you agree with that? Thumbs up.
You mean more on the plate?
Yeah. Do you want more to do? Okay. You don't need more initiatives. The initiatives that you've been developing for the last several years have been fantastic. We have a lot of shifts though. And so a lot of people are doing great things. Like, let's not be down too much, right? Like, there's some great things you all are doing, and you are leaning into those initiatives, and you have great school culture. Some of you absolutely know what to do and are doing it, and you have a responsive staff. But those aren't the people that we hear from typically. Okay, that's why Josh and I do this work. And so they're at, right? And people are asking us for that one coherent system. Here's what I have learned in my life I was a high school teacher for 18 years. I've been in education for over 20 something years now. Started off in elementary, moved through middle school, high school, right? And then I became a clinical therapist and worked in trauma. That's my specialty. So here's what I say that for. And I'm a parent of three boys. Not easy. That's the hardest job I've ever done in my whole life. And like, oh my gosh, it just hurts so bad. It hurts so bad. And I've always found this, when I feel overwhelmed, the best thing to do is keep it simple. Simplify, simplify, simplify. Create systems. One coherent system is always better than a bunch of things that don't feel put together, that don't feel intact. So it's important that we know that this is what we can do. We need a coherent system. So that's the way I see it, Josh, is that that's really the only sustainable path forward. We've tried the piecemeal things. We've tried coming up with new initiatives and adjusting them. But really, we need one cohesive system, one coherent system that has clarity. Because that cohort training that we're doing and that we're seeing, you know, others wanting, that's what builds adult capacity first. And we start with leaders. We used to train all staff, and we still do that, but we always say, listen, the best next thing is this cohort model, so that you can pick people, and teachers are a part of this. Teachers are leaders too. Sometimes you've got those rock star teachers in the building, bring them on the team, put them on the team. All right, so that cohort training, they learn capacity. They learn my 9 essential skills that I did with Dr. Cameron Caswell. She and I wrote that book first, and that's called Improving School Mental Health, because we were looking at the system too. And then when Josh and I came together, we came up with this big plan for this cohort training, because we need the foundational skills, and each one of those have an underlying issue that we keep seeing over and over in mental health and really just problems in our system. And so these skills address those problems like reactivity, impulsivity, loneliness, negative thinking. Oh my goodness, how much negative thinking is going on? It's a big deal. And so when we layer it with the language of behavior, those tenets, now we have a leadership plan. Now we have a systemic plan to pull it all together. That's what we're excited about. But we have to build that adult capacity first. That's what the long-term sustainable plan is. Prevention becomes possible when adults are then regulated. And I did see a question in the Q&A. We're going to get there. It has to do with that. We will definitely address that. Like, how do you do that? It's possible. It is. It's possible. But let's do one more little activity before we take on the next step and then the questions. So this is about your leadership commitment. And again, it doesn't matter what role you're in. You are here. You are leading by being here and showing up and wanting solutions and some change. So I want you to write this sentence out. If you have a pen and paper, write it out. If you just need to think about it, write it out later. One sentence, and you're gonna fill in the blank at the end. So listen carefully, put everything down. Stay with me right here for a second. If nothing changes, 1 year from now, our staff will feel blank. Okay, I'll say it again. If nothing changes, 1 year from now, our staff will feel blank. Fill that in. Think of it yourself. All right, Josh, what's next?
I don't know. I keep looking at these questions. I want to answer the ones that were on live because I think they're both kind of in the same realm, which is saying like a student's removed, but the teacher's feeling kind of helpless, right? Because, you know, they've got 30 other people in that classroom and obviously we can't deny learning. And so what do we do to support that? I think the push-in model is something I wanted to address. It's something we talk about in the book also, which is the opportunity for the teacher, because let's go back to that scenario, Charlie, right? So let's say we have a disruptive student and typically that kid is sent out, right? Or sent to the office. The push-in model alleviates that because it allows that support system, right? And so here's what happens on a traditional discipline. When you send that student away, what has happened is there's a fracture of that relationship, right? So it's between the students and the teacher is fractured because the student is being sent away. They're feeling, you know, that they're not wanted in that classroom. There's a breakdown in that relationship. And so that doesn't usually get resolved. They go to ISS or they go to detention or where they go to the front office, right? There's a lack of learning that's occurring with the student and the teacher, but there's also that breakdown. The other thing too is there's kind of some animosity too between the teacher and the administrator because the teacher wants to know what's going on. Obviously, they care for their student. They want that student in the classroom, but they also don't feel like they have the time to be able to get to the bottom of things. And so the push-in model is allowing someone to go into the classroom and take over, right? So a counselor can go in, an administrator can go in, another teacher can go in, a coach, to just take 3 to 5 minutes of the classroom. So they're the ones watching the students while the teacher and the student go and have that conversation. So the teacher is able to ask what's going on in their world. You know, what is, you know, determining what's behind the behavior. And typically it's something, you know, maybe that it was in the hallway, a dispute with a friend or with a girlfriend or boyfriend. Maybe it's something that happened the night before. Maybe there's some resources. It's a bigger issue. So there's resources that they need that we can get them in contact with. And that's going to help resolve that issue. But then also, you know, they may not be in a state where they can learn today. And so they do need to maybe talk to a social worker. I mean, they may need to talk to a counselor. They may need to, unfortunately, sometimes they have to talk to the police or CPS due to something that's going on at home. And we just assume it's poor behavior because maybe they don't like the teacher or they don't like the content or they don't want to learn today. But what we have found so many times is that there's an underlying issue. So the push-in models allows the teacher to have that 3 to 5 minutes to take a walk with the kid to understand what's going on in the world. If it is something that's low level, then it's about, okay, give them some skills, but then also going through the expectations so that they can go back into the educational environment and be with the teacher. And so just that one thing, that push-in model, we actually reduced thousands, literally thousands of minutes that were regained back into the educational environment, but also a reduction of thousands of minutes in the ISS room. Because when they get sent to ISS, again, it's not a magic thing. They don't just automatically start reflecting on what's happening. They don't build new skills. They don't just magically, you know, behave better going back into the classroom. And as we know, there's a breakdown and a fracture in that relationship. This allows the teacher and the student to regain that. You're showing that there's trust there. There's a relationship building moment there that occurs. And so that's something that I would definitely recommend. That's something that you can start today. I mean, it's not really hard as far as a system goes. We're talking about systems today. It's not hard to build a system that, you know, it's not a hard system to build. Literally, it's through the front office and saying who's available, you know, during these periods or during this time frame to be able to go and relieve that teacher.
Yeah, we want to keep those kids in the classroom with the teachers. And we want teachers to want those kids to be in the classroom. Does that make sense to you all? You know. Yeah. And shout out to some of our schools that are here that we've worked with in districts. So we're seeing you. There's a lot of you here, but we're seeing you. So thank you for being here. Yeah. Okay. So Josh, we answered that first question that we got, one of the questions. I think we should do that because the push-in model is a great great tool to keep people in the classroom, kids in the classroom. That alleviates the whole system if we learn to keep our students in our classrooms. But how do you do that when you are dysregulated and that student dysregulates you over and over and over? Okay, yeah. Yeah. So I know there's people in the classrooms all
we've got chats going on multiple places.
Yeah. So. Not all schools want them to stay in the classroom. Okay. I would like you to add another comment about that. I want to understand that comment better. So Melanie's saying not all students want them to stay in the class, or not all schools want them to stay in the classroom. Okay. The way I take that is not all students are placed in the right place. They're not also in the right setting, or they're in a restricted environment where they don't have a chance because they are going to be dysregulated based on things you'll never know about them, based on things they don't know about themselves, and their parents and caregivers don't know about themselves. So when patterns of behavior shows up over time, we do have to address it. And it starts with, let's understand the environment first. So if you've worked with us before and you've attended these before, which I know I've seen a lot of you have, you've heard us talk about the environment audit. So not only the relationship that we're creating with students, you know, it always goes back to that. It goes back to that. And so many teachers now in PD sessions roll their eyes at that. Just have a relationship with kids and they'll behave. It's not actually the wrong statement, but that's not tangible for them. Number one, they don't always like the kid. And that's actually okay. I will say that's okay. You can react or respond to people you don't like. Because guess what? Not everybody likes us. And that's okay too. So we have to understand that there are still skills that they are lacking and information about how the brain works in the child that they're working with. So that's either a developmental deficit that they don't know is there. They don't understand that certain kids at certain ages don't have the language or, again, the skill. Yeah. Okay. How do we, as a SPED teacher, but as an ISS instructor, start this combo with old school admin? Well, it's collective voice. I would say collective voice, or quite honestly, I'm answering the chat. So there was a question about how do I, as a SPED teacher, you know that that's something that needs to happen, but the ISS instructor, you're like, you want to start this, but you've got old school admin who don't agree or understand. I would say they don't understand. What do school admin like to look at? Data. Give them data. Okay.
For sure.
They have to have data. They may not like it, but they have to have data. If you show them that behavior, underlying behavior is this problem or this problem, and this is why. And if you have a school counselor who's really savvy, which most of you do, and school social workers, they are great informants to be the bridge for you, because you're right. Sometimes there is a divide with the administrator who has that old school thinking, who hasn't had the information or hasn't accepted it because it's been there for a while. Sometimes that school social worker is a really great bridge to bridge that gap in that communication. And then I would say this, I would say at the next staff meeting, can we take one of the questions that we covered in this webinar and just ask the question to staff? Just ask them what worked well at the last PD session. Did it create systemic change? What didn't change? You know, what do you need to change? And here's something you can do no matter what. What I would do if I was in your situation, I've been there because I went through a couple of little different administrators when I was a teacher, but I was a really strong leader in mental health, not only in our school, but our district. And I would say, here's some information that I just found. And can you look over it? And then can we talk about it with the team? And they have to respond to that because you're giving them something tangible that is a common argument that teachers are having already, because we talked as a staff, as you know. So don't give up. Don't give up. Just know that they're probably good people. They just haven't accepted new information for some reason. There's a barrier. Okay, Josh, I said a lot about that. What do you have to say? What are your thoughts?
No, I think so. Data obviously says a lot. I also think test scores, state mm-hmm. test scores say a lot too, and grades. So for instance,
I know, but it's the reality.
And so, you know, I was talking about thousands of minutes back in the classroom. But again, if we're talking about correlations, there's a correlation if they're with the expert, they're getting the content, they're staying in the classroom. What we also saw was grades improved and state test scores improved also. Also, and every state and every district is different, but I mean, we had to provide our discipline record to the state. It was being audited. Do we want thousands of infractions in ISS? Most states frown on that. So, I mean, all of these points to admin saying, okay, do you want a large log of ISS in minutes provided to the state? I'm assuming the answer is no. Do you want test scores to be higher? The answer is going to be yes. And do you want student grades to be higher? So all of these things are connected. And so if you are providing that to admin, typically you have something, it's the language that they speak, right? And the evidence that they need to say, okay, well, maybe this is a good strategy moving forward. The other component too is sometimes my teams would do stuff that I didn't even know about. Right. I mean, I had a seventh grade team where they had a system where when students were, you know, acting a fool in their classroom, they had buddies that they had established that, you know, I'm not regulated as a teacher. I can't handle this right now with this kid. It's disruptive. Can you just take them for 5 to 10 minutes? That teacher would take that student, put them in just a different room for a little bit, give a breather. And then that student came back into the educational environment, you know, after those 5 to 10 minutes. Did admin need to approve that? No. Was it an effective strategy? Yes. Did it better the teacher and the student? So there's a lot of things that happen sometimes behind the scenes. And if you're a special education teacher, I mean, you also have a lot of leeway and power and influence because you have a caseload with IEPs and, you know, language and law that's backing you to, you know, support your students. And so I think there's some things that, you know, provide power to you in that in itself, specific to this question in the chat.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have to also address, let me see, I want to just make sure this the question is already all the way answered. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So like the biggest question is about like, how do we work with teachers to help regulate them and be ready to receive students back in the classroom? Because you're right, they push them out because there was an infraction and it was sometimes very aggressive verbally and sometimes physically. I know. Teacher safety is number one priority. So if there is a threat, if they truly feel threatened, you have got to keep them out of that space until you have a resolution. And Josh, you could speak way better to that, but I'm going to talk about, like, I'm going to take the perspective of the, like, the mental health professional. Okay. And I always say, listen, so we get to decide what to do. And so the best thing we can do when we don't feel like we have control is we can always validate the concern. And I know it sounds like, oh, duh, wait a minute. There's so much to that that we don't do. We are so busy that we dismiss a lot. I do it. I teach about this. I still do it. So we're human. We're going to do that because your brain is scanning the environment for potential threats. And I don't care if you're a parent, a leader, you're a well-recognized figure in the community, you're going to do that still. You're going to make negative judgments, negative self-talk. You're going to make unfair judgments, and you are going to forget to validate somebody who's coming to you for help. I still do it. So we just got to catch ourselves. I've just gotten better at catching myself. Okay. So just remember that. And those of you I've worked with before, you know, remember that talk, the keynote, we are going to make assumptions. Our brain is going to do that. That is never going to change. Well, who knows 1,000 years from now? I don't know. But we have to start by validating because you're going to capture them. And if you don't capture them immediately, you've got that disconnect. All right. So we can't pretend that learning happens in a dysregulated classroom. All right, it's not happening. And we're in the business of education. So we have to have learning happen, but we need to understand the whole child. And you've heard that too, but what does that mean? Do teachers actually know what that means? Do you know what it means? Do your administrators know what that means? And I can tell you, I've worked with a lot of therapists, school-based social workers who don't actually have a lot of information in a school setting. And so they're missing that lens too. So that's how I kind of close that gap is like we have mental health professionals going to talk to teachers and doing some of the PD. But I was a teacher and I had mental health professionals coming to talk to me as a teacher. And I'm like rolling my eyes because like you don't understand the teacher experience. So that's why I bring that in. And Josh brings that dean of students, that administrator role in to, from that perspective as well. And then we work with districts all over the country. So we're going to start by validating and then we're going to reframe the goal in terms that they will receive. I go back to change theory from this. Always go back to what is going to benefit them. It's not to calm them down. How's this going to benefit them? That's how you're going to capture them. Let them know that there is a shared goal that you want to support the student and you want to support them. We forget to do that sometimes. So our words don't always matter if we don't show that. So we're going to create that predictability with that re-entry. We need a protocol for that. Do teachers know that when they send students out, what's going to happen from there? Do they know that that student's going to get a, you know, not just get sent back with the chips and the lollipops and all that stuff? Do they know that there's protocol? Do they understand what that is? Do they know if they send a student to the school counselor, or the school social worker, and they make a referral that they are going to properly take care of that student because they care? But if they don't get communication back or have a clear protocol, like this is going to happen when you do this, I'm going to have this conversation. This is the next piece. If teachers don't know that, they don't have trust in the system. So they need to understand that that behavior is dysregulation. It's not defiance. Kids don't want to do bad. They don't want to appear bad. They don't want to, quote unquote, be bad. They're not necessarily being bad. Sometimes there's purpose behind even the, you know, the intention of being dysregulated on purpose, or it's not really dysregulation if it's they're doing something on purpose. So there's always an underlying issue. All right, Josh, what do you have to say to this? There's so much.
I know. And I'm looking at the time too. So I'm going to throw up a slide real quick, Charlie. Hopefully this works because I want to make sure that folks have a way, you know, if there's something that resonates with you today, is it showing Charlie or no?
I was looking at the chat. Hold on. Oh, no. Oh, it's not.
Oh, goodness. All right. Let me stop sharing then.
Okay. Maybe just why give that a is. Link.
Oh. Yeah, I'll give a link. So the main thing is that I want to know what's resonating with folks, what's their pain point right now, and then, of course, if there's anything that we can, you know, share with you to help and assist with what's going on, because obviously there's a lot of things going on campus. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a link in the chat. The other thing too, I'm looking at, you know, the Q&A piece, and I think a lot of times if I'm speaking specifically to the leaders is that, you know, so many times we provide PD for mental health, but then we don't provide the time for the teachers and for the educators to actually go and do what's being taught, which is super frustrating for them, right? Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, you know, regulation skills. And I think too often we assume that those are already been taught, those have already been possessed, they have the skills to be able to do that. And what we find is when it's in an escalated state, that actually isn't occurring. So, you know, if we're talking about PD models, like this is something that should be a touch point throughout the school year, not just a one and done, like we talked about before. So yeah. what is being taught and how often is it being taught? Did you get it, Charlie? I'm sorry.
I did. I'm putting it on the screen for everyone. Go ahead and keep finishing.
Right. It's the last slide.
Okay.
There you go.
Is that one?
Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah, perfect. So this is just continuing the conversation. It's just a quick form for folks if they're interested. So that was kind of my thoughts, Charlie, in regards to the questions being asked, because I think regulation skills are huge. You know, we talk about being the window, not a mirror. And a lot of times it's to the point where it's like, I just want the kid gone instead of like, you know, working through those de-escalation strategies to get us to a good point to actually have the conversation with the student. And not that it has to happen right then, because sometimes it takes 30 to 45 minutes for a student to dysregulate or from getting from dysregulation to regulation. So we need to make sure that our staff as a whole has that training and the skills necessary for that student to go back to the learning environment. And you know, this works heavy. This works hard. It's messy, you know, with human beings and human relationships, it takes time. And sometimes, you know, we're so focused on the curriculum and where we are within the scope and sequence that we forget sometimes about, you know, the other components of, you know, building those relationships, maintain the relationships, teaching our students the appropriate way to be successful, not just for today or the grade level that they're in, but for them to be successful as adults.
Hmm. Yeah, my goodness. There's so much, so much. I know, but you all are here. So thank you. Thank you, Melanie. I see that. Thank you, everybody, for being here too. And listen, we're going to send an email out 30 minutes after this closes. So if you know someone who tried to get here, I tried to send a couple more emails while Josh was talking at one point to make sure people got the link. Sometimes people do it like last minute, and I wanted to make sure people had it. But if they missed it, we do have a replay. We're going to send the replay out. That may not be in a half an hour, but we will send this resource, and feel free to follow up with us. You can certainly reach out to us. Josh, we had mentioned, somebody had asked us about the cohort page. You can just go to thrivingeducator.org. If you go to the rapid resets on the top right, there's a button for free resource. You'll get in there and you'll get access to all that follow-up, because you'll forget after this. You got to go back to real life soon. but they'll automatically be sent to you. But just because you sent, you came into this webinar and you signed up, you have access to our resources too. So we'll send more to you. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Perfect.
Anything else, Josh?
Oh, I was just going to put in the chat too. I mean, we have other things too that we have to offer, including our podcast. So if people haven't tuned into that, but want some, you know, additional resources throughout the year, we have, actually, I don't remember what episode we're on, but we've got at least, I think we're almost to 60. If I'm not mistaken.
Sounds,
I think we're at like 59.
Right. I'm leaning on you for that. That's about right.
So I threw a link in the chat, which goes to that page with the podcast, with some freebies, services, all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, if you guys need anything else, let me know. I actually will tell people, because I noticed people are here in Kentucky. If you know about accelerated resolution therapy, that's what I specialize in. I do private practice. That's all I do, because it is so important for people who are dysregulated all the time. It addresses the nervous system. So if you're working, especially with teachers and leaders, or parents or kids who are just struggling over and over, there is quick relief. It could be very worth it for them. I'm not promising it can work. That would be unethical. But check it out. Accelerated resolution therapy. You can just reach out to me. Email me. And I'll send my email right here, and you can reach out to me privately if you're really struggling and need some support, or I can connect you if you're in a different state. I'll connect you with somebody who is certified to teach it there or to do that therapy there. Okay. I know everybody's time is very valuable. Should we close this down?
Yeah, let's close it down. I just appreciate everyone. Obviously you all have a wonderful heart and wanting to serve your students, your community, your educators. So we're just so appreciative of you being here today.
Thank you. Thank you, Tracy. And thank you, everybody else. Josh, I'm going to close it down. And everybody, I appreciate you so very much. No more. Okay. Awesome. All right. Have a wonderful day, everybody. And we'll see you later. Bye.
Yes.